If you're talking about it, she's talking about it. This is Jordana Green on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Moose Miller sitting in tonight for Jordana Green. Glad that you're hanging out here with us. As we continue to watch that radar, and as you heard Mike Lynch saying, going to get some rain for sure. Looks like our friends down in Lakeville might actually be enjoying some rain, and maybe if they could send that to other parts of the Midwest. I was watching the national news tonight. Man, this drought is just unbelievable in its reach and effect on the economy. Before we jump to our next guest, because the iPhone 5 is supposed to be coming out here pretty soon, and I wanted to visit on that a little bit, I wanted to run through some of these text comments. You know, when you get into this business or whatever you want to call it of talk radio or news information radio, when you first start in it, you're I think, as where I'm sitting from, maybe a little bit concerned about making people mad at you, or that you want everybody to like you. And then you finally get to the point where you just don't care. You just want to express your thoughts, feelings, and opinions. And I love comments either way. Please remove Moose from WCCO. He's overly opinionated without the ability to back up his opinions when callers call in. To which I would respectfully point you to the past hour. Where did we not back things up with facts like you have to pay to get a photo ID in Minnesota? You know, we had some callers calling in going, you have to have an ID at all times. No, you don't. That's not a fact. That's your opinion. The fact is you don't. And the fact is, when it comes to photo ID, it's not free in Minnesota. For seniors 65 and older, it's going to cost you about $11-$12. And for people under that age, closer to 20. And maybe they can make some exceptions in some instances. But, you know, please, with all due respect, don't try to throw your opinion out there that anybody get a photo ID, it's free. No, it's not the case. Moving on, we've got some other text comments here. One woman pointing out, my mother lived in Arizona for 15 years, then returned to Minnesota at age 85. Since she did not have a valid Minnesota driver's license, she needed to submit a birth certificate, which she could not produce. So how is she going to vote? I just have a real problem with when we're putting roadblocks up in front of the right to vote under the guise that we're trying to prevent voter fraud. How'd that work out with all those felons? Minnesota convicted about 100 of them that had photo ID, showed their picture ID, got in to vote, shouldn't have. So how does your photo ID rule prevent that from happening? And when it comes to absentee ballots or mail-in ballots, early voting. You know, how's your photo ID rule going to work there? Here's another one where a woman had to prove her three marriages and divorces and death of spouses in order to prove her current name. She's still having trouble trying to get her Minnesota driver's license and photo ID. So as you get ready to head to the polls this fall, I'd think long and hard. We talked to one of our staunch Republican friends who called in a little bit ago, Dan in Minnetonka. You know, all I'm trying to do is just get you to start thinking about the long-term ramifications of what we're heading towards here. I hold my right to vote sacred, and I don't think that putting roadblocks up and requiring a photo ID is going to prevent fraud. And that's what the big fear is. And it's not there. You know, maybe you can spend some time and shoot me an email or whatever and show me these huge documented cases of fraud. Because you know what? I'm going to point you right over here to this AP study that points out we've thrown out more legitimate votes in places like Indiana, Ohio, parts of Georgia, because we questioned, with no photo ID, you can't vote. So we set it off to the side. It's a provisional ballot, whatever you want to call it. And those people were legal voters, but they didn't have a photo ID. So let's penalize them, because their vote doesn't count as much as yours, because you're able to get a photo ID. And that's the other thing. You know, just because you live in a world where it's pretty easy to get access to a photo ID, I think it's naive's not the right word. Maybe a little arrogant to just assume that everyone has that type of access. not everybody does. And to suppress the vote, man, think long and hard on that one. Anyway, we'll move on from this and jump over here to our conversation on the iPhone 5 and see what new little toys and tricks the folks at Apple have come out with. We are joined by Julio Ojeda Zapata, the consumer tech reporter and columnist who we read in the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Good evening. I'm doing pretty good. So what are we learning? What do we know about the iPhone 5? Is it going to be released around September 10th?
That is, the solid rumor. That's the likelihood that it'll be announced in September and then maybe released 1 to 2 weeks later. That's kind of the trend every year. So that's looking pretty solid.
Is it going to have a bigger screen?
Again, we're still in the realm of rumor here, but apparently what's going to happen is the iPhone is going
to... You know, Julio, your phone line connection is really sounding bad and low. I'll tell you what.
How's that?
Oh my God, that's much better. What did you do? You're the tech guy.
Yeah, I tech fixed it.
I was like, what the hell? I'm like, I know it sounds better than this.
Yeah, sorry about that. It sound better now?
Yeah, we can actually hear you.
Excellent. Anyway, the rumor is that the iPhone will look very much like it looks today, except it'll be slightly more elongated. And that will accomplish a couple of things. It'll let you put in another row of icons, and also it'll make the screen a little more like the dimensions of a movie screen. So it'll be a little better for watching video because if you flip it horizontally.
Okay, so more what they call 16:9.
Yeah. In terms of design, again, rumors, but in terms of design, apparently it'll look very much like it looks today, and that's a good thing because I don't like all the Android phones that are a lot wider. A wider phone in your hand is bad because you can't get your thumb all the way across it, and makes it very difficult to use with one hand.
So interesting.
If Apple keeps the horizontal dimensions of the phone the same, just makes it as narrow as it is now, that's a good thing because then you can sort of fiddle with it in one hand with your thumb, which is very, very difficult to do with some of those big Android phones out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you look at that Samsung Galaxy, and it's been extremely popular. Its sales have been huge, but I think a lot of that is because a lot of people are waiting for the iPhone 5, aren't they?
You make a good point. The Android phones that are coming out are very, very nice. We're just getting to the point where the Android phones are about, in my opinion, as good as an iPhone.
Yeah.
So they're very, very slick, but you know, back to my point, those screens are so huge, they're very difficult to use with one hand. I tested a Verizon phone, and you'll have to forgive me, I'm blanking out on the name here, but that Verizon phone was a little bit of a throwback. It was a lot narrower, a lot smaller, and I think that's a good way to go. We need phones like that.
What about Apple's ideas on producing for the Asian and European markets a product that is somewhere between an iPad and an iPhone? It's almost like an iPad mini.
Yeah, that's the other hot rumor. There's a high, based on what I've heard, there's a high likelihood that a smaller iPad with a unique design will be released, and it'll sort of be the midpoint between the iPad and the iPhone or the iPod Touch, and that device hypothetically would compete with Google's new Nexus 7 tablet, which came out recently, with Amazon's Kindle Fire. There's a Samsung Note device that just came out. These are all tablet-like devices, but they're smaller than the iPad, which is handy because you can read in bed with them, with just holding it in one hand, which is difficult to do with the iPad. It's easier to carry around. So there's definitely a market and a demand for these devices, and I think Apple's going to respond to that in short order here.
Do you think that Apple will add, which I think is really slick on the Samsung smartphone, the snap ability where you can hold two of those phones together and transfer photos and whatnot?
It's quite possible. There's a technology that some Android phones have that is missing on the iPhone, which is called near-field communication, or NFC. And I just happened to be working on a story about that. With certain Android phones, you can go to like McDonald's And instead of pulling your wallet out of your pocket and paying with your credit card, you can just tap the phone against the terminal and pay that way. And that's very, very slick. You can do that in an increasing number of places around the Twin Cities. You can't do it with the iPhone because it doesn't have NFC, but the rumor is that the next iPhone will have NFC built into it. I hope it does because I'm a real fan of that technology.
Sure, but as long as nobody gets a hold of your phone and has the code to get into it and then starts buying up everything by tapping your phone.
Yeah, well, there are safeguards. Like with NFC phones that I'm using for that, you always have to punch in a four-digit key the same way you would on using an ATM.
Interesting. Hey, Julio, hang on here. We're going to come back, and on the other side of this, I want to see if you can kind of lay out your thoughts on 4G versus 3G.
Sure.
And how that plays out into markets here like the Twin Cities, and also any other new goodies or rumors tied into this iPhone 5, because I'm hearing about a smaller SIM card and all of that stuff. So we'll get to that coming up here. Moose Miller sitting in tonight for Jordana Green on News Radio 830 WCCO.
From the Buick Studios, this is News Radio 830 WCCO.
This is my paycheck. And this... oh, this is the new iPhone 5. There goes my paycheck. Mm-hmm. Moose Miller sitting in tonight for Jordana Green here on WCCO. We're visiting on tech topics, talking about iPhone 5, which is rumored to be coming out in September. And joining us once again, the consumer technology reporter and columnist from the St. Paul Pioneer Press, that would be Julio Ojeda Zapata. Welcome back, my friend.
Thank you.
So, 4G versus 3G.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Well, 4G is kind of a squishy generic term, and it means different things for different carriers.
Can I translate what I think it means?
Yeah.
You pay more and get more dropped calls in some instances.
it's interesting that you mentioned that because Verizon today announced a fairly major Minnesota expansion of its own version of 4G, which is called long-term evolution or LTE. Very, very fast. I've used LTE on Verizon handsets, and it's just wicked, wicked, wicked fast.
Wow, it's good news.
For data, you know, if you're surfing the internet and so forth. And now it's available in a broader swath of the greater Twin Cities area, and it's also being made available in Mankato and Worthington. Verizon is my favorite carrier for speed because it has the fastest data speed, and it's also my favorite carrier for coverage. If you're going to be in outstate Minnesota and you want to get a signal, you know, very basic thing, get a signal, you know, Verizon is definitely the way to go.
Where does AT&T stack up in there?
I like AT&T. I'm an AT&T customer myself because I mostly use my phone in the Twin Cities, and that's solid. It's kind of iffy outstate, but in the Twin Cities, it's solid. And AT&T does not have a 4G network as fast as Verizon does, but it will soon, I'm told, it will soon in the Twin Cities roll out its own version of LTE,
sure.
And that will give it parity with Verizon. So I'm looking forward to that.
The knock I've always heard on the AT&T is that in L.A., New York, you've got so many users, especially of Apple products and whatnot, that it just was slamming the system. And I can tell you, people that I've talked with in those cities, and Miami, another one, that, yeah, that was the case. I think they've gotten a better handle on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you travel quite a bit, Verizon is the way to go, regardless of whether you're going to be in rural or urban areas.
True.
The coverage is better, and, you know, it's just more dependable. But as I say, I'm an AT&T customer. I use it in Twin Cities. I'm pretty happy with
it. All right. What about any new bells and whistles with this iPhone 5? I had heard that the SIM card's probably going to be smaller.
Yeah, well, there's one somewhat troublesome rumor, which is the connector, you know, the part, the hole in the bottom where you dock. That apparently is going to be a lot smaller. And this is going to create some problems because a lot of people have, like, docks and, you know,
sure.
radios with docks and, you know, docks in their cars.
So we're going to have to buy new plugins?
Yeah, if this rumor is true and it's looking pretty solid, that's going to be a pretty big hassle. I have docks up the wazoo all over the place, and I'm going to have to replace all of those, and I'm not happy about that. I don't really know what the advantage of the smaller connector is going to be, but it's going to create a lot of difficulty.
I'll tell you what the whole advantage is. It creates more profit because they're going to sell more product.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly, and that's going to, that means everybody's going to have to go out and buy a whole bunch of accessories, so the third-party accessory and device maker is going to be pretty happy about that.
All right, finally, Steve Jobs, the late Apple creator, his home was burglarized back in, I think, July. Somebody took like $60,000 worth of computers and other tech gear out of his house, and they ended up catching the guy by the end of the weekend. Was that because Jobs had had a lot of low-jack stuff kind of written into that equipment?
Well, I'm not surprised because Steve Jobs, unlike most big tech executive types who have a lot of security and mansions with big fences and things, Steve Jobs lived in a fairly ordinary, fairly accessible house. I mean, you could just literally drive down the street.
Well, yeah, I saw it on 60 Minutes.
Yeah, so the same way you could drive in front of my house. And so I think this was kind of inevitable if something like this was going to happen because, you know, his house was right there. Anybody?
Well, yeah, the guy that ended up getting popped and pinched by the police said he didn't know it was Steve Jobs' house. But I keep coming back to, you know, that's why if you have the capability to add like a low-jacking to your iPhone or your laptop or your computer, do it.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, Apple has a Find My iPhone and a Find My Mac feature built in, which is free.
And for laptop users, you know, I can't tell you the number of instances I've seen where somebody grabs up somebody's laptop and next thing you know, because they had low-jacked it, you've got it back or you at least tracked down through an ISP address pretty succinctly where it is.
Exactly.
Well, it's always interesting to talk with you, Julio.
Anytime, I appreciate it.
From the St. Paul Pioneer Press, consumer tech reporter and columnist Julio Ojeda Zapata, our guest here on WCCO Radio. I'm Moose Miller, sitting in for Jordana Green tonight. Coming up on the other side, after we check the weather and see if we've still got that thunderstorm watch cooking things up here tonight, we will visit on Groupon. And is the bloom starting to fade for Groupon? Is that business starting to grow cold? We'll get to that coming up in this next half hour here on News Radio 830 WCCO.
News you can depend on is on News Radio 830 WCCO.
Well, the big question is, is the business of Groupon starting to grow cold with businesses? We're going to visit on that here on WCCO Radio. The author of the upcoming book, The Fusion Marketing Bible, joins us, Lon Safko. Welcome to WCCO.
Hey, Moose. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, we're kind of curious to see what your thoughts are on this, because I'm hearing all kinds of rumblings about Groupon has, you know, the popularity has waned and that it's good for certain types of businesses or if you offer a service, but if you're a restaurant, you can get clobbered by this thing.
Well, you know, it's actually true. And they were kind of counting on cashing in on Europe. In May of 2010, they bought Citi Deal, which was the largest Groupon clone across the world. And it was huge. They picked up like 14 different countries. And they were really counting on that generating revenue. But it's not happening because, as you know, Europe is kind of in a lot of trouble right now financially. So you got that. And then the other thing that was unanticipated, look at the competitors. Google came out with something almost identical, Google Deals, and Amazon came out with almost exactly the same thing as Groupon. So you got these two huge mega competitors, and yeah, now it's just to the point where it's just a bunch of noise coming in.
Well, you also look at past examples that you can go online and type in things about Groupon, especially some of the YouTube videos and people that own businesses talking about they didn't see the repeat customers, or worse yet, they just got so slammed by the deals that they couldn't, you know, really provide the dining experience, let alone the food that they had offered in the Groupon deal.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem with all kinds of coupons, especially if you're really effective at getting them into people's hands. And what happens with most coupons is you don't get the new customer as often as you get the repeat customer, and that's not the ones you want because you're giving them the discounted food and they're already a customer. The whole idea is to build your customer base by offering new customers a discount.
So with a 14% drop in its stock, where do we see things heading with regard to Groupon? Is it, you know, starting to teeter into the Facebook territory of, you know, how do you really monetize Facebook and if you're Groupon, how do you grow or increase growth revenue?
Well, that's going to be a problem for them. It's a huge problem, and they're kind of making a feeble effort of getting into online retail, everything from jewelry to kitchen appliances, and that's kind of ridiculous in my opinion because you really can't compete with companies like Amazon. So they're going to have to continue to find new ways of making Groupon, the coupon thing, more effective. And really, I think strategic partnering is probably the best thing. Right now, if you sign up, you get it blasted in your email. But I think what they ought to be doing is distributing them directly through Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. That's my next question here is email is so stone tablet to that 20-something and younger crowd. Email, are you kidding? I'm not going to take time to open that up.
That's true. My 28-year-old daughter, I don't think she's looked at her email in several years. It always says that her server is full. But you know what? Send her a text message, and she's on the phone in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's understanding your audience. And, of course, you know, a lot of restaurant really caters towards the younger audience.
Well, and that begs the question with, you know, things like Foursquare and stuff like that that's out there. How could you combine, you know, a Groupon type of deal to take advantage of smartphone technology that knows where you are and boom, you're in the neighborhood. Here's a deal for a buck off a Starbucks coffee.
Man, this is refreshing. You totally get it. So often I get on a radio show and the host doesn't have a clue. You totally get it. That's exactly right. Just what you said. They need to be partnering with companies like Foursquare. So as you're being geo-targeted, driving down the street and you're going past a restaurant, that your cell phone goes off and says, hey, come on in for a free bowl of chips right now because I know you're outside.
Yeah, and I don't understand why more companies aren't jumping on that, because that's only going to get better and faster.
Well, I think most companies really don't understand it, and that's the problem with all of the digital media, is it's fairly complex, and nobody's really sure what the ROI is.
Sure. Well, you know, let's take this a little bit further. The digital dashboard in your car. You're in that neighborhood. You're looking around for somewhere to eat, and boom, you could pop up a Groupon deal right there.
Yeah, and it should go to your, you should be able to send it right over to your smartphone, so you walk in, and the coupon is right in your smartphone, ready to be scanned at the register.
Exactly.
And we should be using something like Google Wallets or what they call NFC, near field communication, where you're taking that same smartphone, and when it comes time to pay, you just tap it on the register and leave. That's built into all of our smartphones, but we're not using that either.
And why is that? Is it because it we don't have enough understanding of where this technology is and how easy it really is to kind of roll this in?
You know, it's all about adoption. If you go to Europe, you'll find that NFC, that tap and go technology, is being used everywhere.
Yeah, my daughter said that. She was just over in London for a study abroad program, and she just came back raving about that and was like, why aren't we doing that here?
And by the way, we invented it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's because we're so affluent. We have desktops and laptops and smartphones and iPads and tablets. And you know what? We don't focus as much on the capabilities of the smartphone. But if you go outside of the U.S., they can only afford one technology, smartphones, so they have to do everything. They're much more focused on smartphone technology.
That's a really good point, because you think about it, we do. We just have this dirge of technology we've buried ourselves in.
Yep.
Wow, interesting. Well, let's focus in a little bit on your latest upcoming book, The Fusion Marketing Bible. For people that are kind of into tech and trends and stuff like that, yeah. Lay out there why they should go out and pick this up.
Well, the cool thing is that I wrote the Social Media Bible, which is a bestseller, 4 languages, 3rd edition. So that went really good. And everybody asks me, what comes next? What's after social media? And they've been asking me that question for the last 3 years. And it's like, social media, what comes after you? Are you kidding me? So I gave it some serious thought, and I realized, you know what, in a couple of years, there'll be no such thing as a vice president of social media. It's any more than we have a vice president of billboards. Eventually, it's all going to come into one department, be completely cohesive, coherent, and we have to start thinking that way. And the fusion marketing is actually a new form of marketing, and it's so unique, I got a patent pending on it.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to diving into my copy. And you know, the other thing that I keep coming back to just in the back of my head is Facebook. And I hate to say it, but it's over. You know, the only growth they have is in older Americans who are, I've got to join that book face thing. And for the rest of us, we're so just sick and tired of being spammed by slot mania and all this other crap. That, you know, I find myself using it less and less and more, you know, doing the Twitter thing and the text messaging.
That's absolutely right, and really most of the world is starting to do it. The younger audience and the older, the very young and the very old are still fairly active, but everybody pretty much in the center, the demographic, is starting to drop out of it, and they've got to add some bells and whistles, add some features and benefits, or they're going to lose their entire followership.
Here's a suggestion, Facebook. Give me easier ability to drop people that send me stupid requests for Farmville and everything else, because you make it so difficult. I got to dig through 15 layers of crap to try and be able to shut that stuff off.
Hey, email, you click a button and you eliminate your spam. And that's what it is. It's Facebook spam.
Yeah. Well, Facebook makes it, you got to go through a labyrinth to be able to do that.
Well, they've made quite a few technological mistakes, and they're really ticking off their membership.
Well, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, I don't think he was dragged into doing this Facebook stock IPO. He had finally gotten to 500, you know, initial investors, and once you get to that point, you got to, you know, make it a public company and all of that. And, you know, it was never ready for prime time and never should have been.
Absolutely, but it made about 125 multimillionaires. So it
sure did.
and
where's that stock today?
In the tank?
Yeah, a lot of people that bought in at 40 and 42 are going, oh, it's at 20. Maybe it'll double. Okay, good luck.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez.
Well, your book is certainly worth picking up for people that are into kind of the techs and the trends and social media and marketing and all of that. The Fusion Marketing Bible by Lon Safko. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Moose, it was awesome. I'd love to come back sometime.
Anytime, my friend. Hey, coming up here on WCCO, we had a perfect game thrown tonight. I love it when we get that baseball perfect game, and we'll kind of dive into that, and then we got some sound from it we'll throw your way here as well. Moose Miller sitting in tonight for Jordana Green on 830 WCCO.
News Radio 830 WCCO.
Shake that.
Oh, what a great way to wrap up the show tonight here on WCCO. Moose Miller sitting in for Jordana Green. I love it when we get a perfect game in baseball, because it always reminds me of Billy Chappell, For the Love of the Game. I love that whole idea and concept of Kevin Costner's character kind of reliving his life out on the mound. Final game of his career, and he ends up throwing a perfect game. So let's check in with our buddy Jonathan Lowe, see where we are in the soundbite of this particular perfect game.
Well, I got the last call, the call of the final out from today's game, and this comes courtesy of Dave Sims of Root Sports out in the Pacific Northwest, out in Seattle.
All right,
Seattle.
So it's the Seattle Mariners and the Tampa Bay Rays.
That's correct.
The Seattle Mariners, Felix Hernandez, the 2-2.
And there you go.
Oh, that's awesome. You know, this is the third perfect game in baseball this season. And it's first joining Gems by Chicago's Philip Humber against the Mariners in April, and San Francisco's Matt Cain taking on Houston back in June. More than half of all of the perfectos, 12, have come in the last 25 seasons.
And there was some other some tidbits, because I'm an avid ESPN watcher, but this is the first season where there have been three perfect games thrown in a season.
Yeah.
And
what is it with the Tampa Bay Rays, man? They just keep getting snake bit with this.
I have no idea. It's weird, because they've been no hit three times, I think, in the last three seasons, and then they've had perfect games thrown against them three times the last four seasons.
Sure.
And the weird thing was, this took place at Safeco. This was the third no-hitter or perfect game at Safeco Field this season.
Wow. Isn't that exciting? And for the Rays, you know, you look at third time in four seasons they've had a perfect game pitched against them. And I feel for my friends that are Tampa Bay Ray fans that live in the Tampa Bay area, Goose and Dan, because they are avid fans. And every time I think of a perfect game or a no-hitter, I'm reminded when I spent time working with the Twins, Eric Milton threw a no-hitter, and Terry Steinbach caught that game. And we were working it for the Twins Metrodome crew, where you'd get up on screen for the Jumbotron, and you would have to read off a question with a contestant up there in left field. So you know, you've got the big Jumbotron screen kind of up behind you, and I'd be, hey, I've got Jonathan Lowe here with me from South Minneapolis. And Jonathan, here's the question tonight, and it would appear Wheel of Fortune-wise, right? It would just pop up on the screen. Well, we had worked a late night the game, or the night before. It ran, like, I want to say 14 innings or some ungodly length. So we didn't have our regular prep meeting the next morning, which was a Sunday game, which started around, I think, noon or 11 o'clock. But we get to this point in the game, and I'm with my contestant. Nobody had proofread the question, and Eric Milton's in the middle of throwing this no-hitter. And all of a sudden, up pops the question, name the last Twins pitcher to throw a no-hitter. And you could just hear the crowd, oh. And I never said it out loud. I just kind of let us all read it for that moment. And the answer was Scott Erickson. And I'm looking down, and I could see in the dugout Tom Kelly poking his head out from the dugout. And he's just, if he could have grabbed me, he would have throttled me. It wasn't my fault. You know, I'm looking at the production crew off to the side. I'm the one on camera, and I'm going, hey, you know, you're leaving me hanging here, man. But it all worked out, and Eric got his no-hitter, and we certainly have a great story to tell there. We will check in with CBS World National News and come back tomorrow night. Mishki joins us after 10 here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Thank you, Jonathan Lowe.